Here's Haynes Children's Librarian Holly Davis reading Fisherman Cat. This is part one of three parts.
Fisherman Cat by Joanne Rowe. Chapter 1. Flying high above the beach, the eagle looked down at an orange-striped cat fishing in the tide pools. Silently he dived, his talons open to snatch him. But when the eagle's shadow moved across the sand, the cat looked up in alarm, leaped sideways, and ran into the forest. The eagle veered off in disappointment. He had missed his prey again. Marco the Manx peered from the protection of the trees. It had been another close call. The eagle had been trying to catch him ever since he came to Jackson Island. The cat sat down to smooth his heavy fur, matted from salt water and seaweed. He had lived on Jackson Island for 2 years, ever since he fell off his owner's boat. Even though he made it to shore, a nasty dog had chased him deep into the forest, where he became lost. Sometimes Marco remembered his days as a city cat. His memories of people were fading, though. Now he was afraid of the boaters who came to visit the island in the summer. Even Jeff and Susie, his owners from the city, were strangers to him. The last time they had come to Jackson Island in their sailboat, Marco heard them calling his name, but he did not come near. "I wonder if Marco is still alive," said Susie that last time. "I would surely like to see him again. And his kittens. Remember, Jeff, his mate was going to have kittens that last time we saw Marco."
"Yes, I remember," said Jeff sadly. And he called out, "Marco! Marco, here, kitty, kitty!"
He and Susie walked deep into the forest, calling for Marco. But the cat did not respond. Marco the city cat had become Marco the survivor. To keep from starving, he had learned to hunt for food, to eat fish and sea creatures off the beach. Several months later, he'd found a companion, a stray kitten, that wandered away from another summer boating family. The two cats were inseparable. Now that the eagle had disappeared, Marco turned to start home to his cave, where Blackie and their four kittens waited. Just then he noticed a large boat coming close to the beach. There were loud, excited voices. Marco waited to see what was happening. The boat drifted closer to the shore, and Marco could see people running around on board, waving their arms and shouting. With a big crunch, the boat stopped suddenly in shallow water. "What is that smell?" Marco thought. "Fish! It smelled like fresh fish! Mmm, his favorite!" He sat down to watch the boat. Sailors in warm sweatshirts hung over the stern of the boat, looking down at the propeller. Loud shouts came from inside the boat.
"I don't see anything wrong with the prop," yelled one man to someone below.
"Well, something sure caused the engine to stop," came the muffled reply. "It seemed to have jammed tight."
There were clanking noises and more cries back and forth. One man came up to the bow to look at the beach, then down at the water. He shook his head in disgust.
"We're hard aground," he said, "and the tide's going out, so we're going to be stuck until it comes in again. That is, if we get the engine going again by then." "Hey, Scott," he called, "throw out an anchor so the stern stays in the deep water as much as possible."
"Sure, Captain," said a blonde young man, tossing out an anchor and making it fast. Then he threw a second anchor on shore and jumped off to make sure it was secure. When the tide came back in, the boat would not move sideways to the beach. Scott strolled along the beach, moving toward the forest where Marco was hiding. Marco turned to run away, but the sailor changed his mind, stooped to pick up a shell, and returned to the boat.
"Anything I can do, Captain?" he asked.
"Nothing for now, I guess, unless you're any good at mechanics."
Marco continued to watch the boat, fascinated by the wonderful smell of fish and curious about the activities. A little later, pots and pans rattled inside the boat. The cook was preparing dinner. New delicious smells reached Marco. By evening, the boat was completely aground. The crew dragged logs and rolled large rocks into place, bracing the boat so it didn't tip on its side during low tide. Eventually, the propeller was clear of the water, resting on the sand. The sailors moved around the wobbly decks with difficulty and care. Clanking and pounding continued deep inside the hull, where Randy the mechanic was taking apart the engine, trying to find the problem. Frequently, one of the sailors poked his head above decks to look around. Chapter 2. Finally, the mechanic said,
"Hooray! I found the problem, and I think I can fix it right here. Everything should be ready by the time the tide comes in."
"Great," replied the captain.
It doesn't look as if we've damaged the propeller either on this soft sand beach."
The captain came on deck and leaned on the crooked railing. He was a big man with a red beard and wide shoulders. His sweatshirt was faded and pulled carelessly over a red plaid shirt. Another sailor joined him.
"Nice little island, isn't it, Don?" said the captain. "Doesn't seem to be anyone around, though. Not too many people come cruising this early in the year."
Don replied, "No, probably not until the kids get out of school in June. I don't think there are any animals on this island either. There's no water that I know of." One animal, Marco, was very much alive. He had found water in pools formed by rain and dew. Raccoons lived on the island, too. Attracted by the odor of fish, Marco continued to watch. In a way, he liked to hear people talk, an easy feeling from his city cat days as the special pet of Jeff Randall.
"Guess I'll turn in," said the captain. "We'll have to get up early. Be ready when the tide floats us off the beach."
Don yawned and agreed.
"Yes, I guess I'll go below and read for a while. I can't do anything more to help the mechanic. He's about finished with the repairs."
Soon everything grew very quiet. The moon came up and reflected in the calm water like a long yellow road. The mechanic finished his job and went to bed. Marco waited until there was no sound from the boat. Then he crept close to the hull and sniffed around. The smell of fish was very strong, delightfully so. Very carefully, he jumped onto the logs supporting the boat and hopped onto the deck. The deck itself smelled fishy, and toward the stern the smell was very strong. Somewhere aboard there were fish. Marco clawed at the boards. The day's catch of fish was down there. He just knew it. There was a sigh from a sleeping sailor, and Marco shrank in fear to a corner of the deck. When no one appeared, he ventured farther. Near the center of the boat, there was an open hatch, from which there came a strong smell of oil and the snores of sleeping sailors, too. Marco peered into the space, his nose twitching with disgust at the oily smell, but he jumped into the compartment to explore. A big engine towered over his head. In another area, there were boxes and boxes of supplies piled from ceiling to floor. Marco slipped between them, but didn't find anything edible. All that night, while the sailors slept peacefully, Marco prowled through the fishing boat, following the tantalizing fishy smell without success. The fish were in a different part of the boat. Chapter 3. Just before the sun came up, he had given up the search and was starting for the hatch to leave the boat. At the sound of someone moving around, he stopped, one foot in the air. Footsteps came loud and firm, and Marco dived silently into the storage room to hide among the boxes. A sleepy-looking man turned on a light to look at the engine once again. He seemed satisfied and clumped up the ladder to the deck, where the captain already was pulling on his clothes. Other men moved around in the forecastle, dressing and talking sleepily. It was still quite dark outside, but it was time to go.
"Well, Cap," said the mechanic, "I think the engine's going to work now."
"Good. The tide's coming in strong," replied the captain. "If we're ever going to get free of this beach, it must be soon."
Water was lapping at the bottom of the purse seiner, making the log bracings drop away and bang against the sides. Little by little, the seiner righted itself until it was entirely level again, a few feet of water under its keel.
"I guess that's it," said Randy. "Start her up, and I'll watch things below. We ought to be able to back off soon."
He came below to adjust things on the engine. It started with a roar that frightened Marco, still crouching in the storage area. The mechanic seemed satisfied and went on deck with the rest of the crew, slamming the hatch shut behind him. Marco was trapped below deck on the purse seiner. The boat began to move and turn, and soon the engine settled down to a steady hum.
"We'll have to sell these fish as soon as possible," said the captain. "Set a course for Bellingham. After we unload, we must take on supplies before we head north for Bristol Bay."
When no one else came below, Marco dared to move from his hiding place and look around. He searched the noisy engine area, the storage room and the forecastle, the bunk area toward the bow of the boat. There was no way out of that dark place. He curled up and slept for a while among the heap of boxes. After a while, there were sounds of chains rattling and the men talking to each other. The boat stopped. Overhead, a hatch opened, and there were joking voices of workers unloading the fish. In Marco's prison, the fish smell was very strong, making him hungry. He hadn't eaten all day, and he was growing very thirsty, too. By afternoon, he was so thirsty that he lapped up some of the dirty water from the bilge. Tasting of oil and fish, it made Marco a little sick to his stomach. Crewmen stamped up and down the ladder all that day, stacking more boxes and packages in the storage room. Marco had to keep changing his hiding places. Late in the afternoon, the sturdy purse seiner, the Anna Marie, started its engine, and pulled away from the dock. After a while, the boat rocked more violently, rolling back and forth and occasionally up and down. Marco became seasick and very frightened. Eventually, the boat stopped, and there were rattling noises of the anchor chain. The boat had stopped for the night in a pleasant cove on one of the Gulf Islands in the Georgia Strait. The cook started dinner, and the sailors laughed and teased the cook as he worked.
"Cut it out if you want any dinner," laughed Mark. "Well, why don't you give me a can of tomatoes, please?"
"Okay, I'll get it for you," said Don.
Marco heard footsteps come down to the hatch. It opened, and Don climbed down. Whistling a lively song, he poked around in the storage room until he found the tomatoes the cook needed. Don didn't see Marco. Of course, he wasn't looking for a cat, either. Chapter 4. Now that the boat had stopped, Don propped the hatch open. The fresh air seeped down into the hold and smelled wonderful to Marco. Even more interesting was the smell of food cooking, but the cat didn't dare go up on deck while the men were around. Late that evening, when the men had fallen asleep, frighteningly near to him in their bunks, Marco managed to clamber up the ladder and squeeze through the opening onto the deck. He listened for any sign of danger, but nothing moved. Only the captain slept in his pilot house on the deck. It was a warm night, and the moon shone brightly. There were trees nearby on shore, from which owls hooted and animals made rustling noises. Small waves swooshed against the shore. Marco crept ever so softly toward the galley, where the smell of food was still strong. He jumped up on the counter, and next to the sink, he found the remains of a cake. Although he wasn't very fond of cake or bread, he gobbled it down, scattering crumbs all over the counter. He drank water from a pan soaking in the sink. In the pilot house, the captain shifted position and coughed, sending Marco flying out onto the deck. When the captain settled down again to snore steadily, Marco relaxed and nosed around the boat. With a full stomach, he cleaned himself carefully with his raspy tongue before finding a snug place to sleep inside a big skiff lashed onto the deck. The summer sunrise came very early in these northern waters. Eagles screamed high overhead, and the gulls coasted silently along the water's edge looking for breakfast. Offshore, a spout of water was followed by a huge dark body arching out of the sea. A flashy black-and-white killer whale, or orca, greeted the morning joyfully. Aboard the Anna Marie, sailors awakened to come out on deck, stretch, and talk. They warmed their hands with mugs of coffee, talking about the day ahead. In the skiff, Marco shrank into as small a furry ball as he could. There was nowhere else to hide. Fortunately, no one saw him. The sailors were tramping up and down from the deck to the compartments below, too busy preparing for the day to loaf around. After breakfast, the sailors pulled up the anchor, closed the hatch to the engine room, and set off again into the open sea. They were traveling north toward Alaskan waters for the salmon runs. Until they reached the Gulf of Alaska, there was little for them to do. Marco remained hidden, but soon grew very chilled when the cold wind blew and clouds covered the sun. The boat rolled to one side, then to the other, sometimes lifting up high and plunging down again, burying its bow in the waves. Cold salt spray flew over the entire boat, wetting down Marco in his hiding place. He couldn't seem to get warm any way he turned.
End of part 1. Continued in part 2.